Tampa Bay Rowdies, who have made a huge upset.
Your 2021 Eastern Conference champion.
Attack by score! Oh, that is a delicious goal for Tampa Bay.
And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Nolan coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast. I am here tonight to cover the Rowdies like I usually am, although I am not joined like I usually am by my co-host Carlos. Instead, we have producer Eureka here filling in and a cat alongside him. It is RBLR. What is RBLR Cats show? Eureka, I'm sure that
Meow BLR
program is usually there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to Liz and Tom are not here, but the cats are. That's what's on brand here at RBLR. So,
yeah, we always try to fill in with a feline friend at some point over the course of the week. So there might actually be multiple this evening. But regardless, we do have Eureka joining us to talk about the Rowdies and a couple of different things tonight. As everyone listening, I'm sure, knows, the Rowdies did not make the playoffs. So we do not have a Rowdies game to talk about, which is obviously very unfortunate for both of us and anyone who would be silly enough to listen to this podcast on Tuesday, November 4th of 2025 specifically. But there is stuff to talk about related to the Rowdies, so we're going to do that. It's not just the playoffs around USL, although we are going to cover that too. It is related to individual players for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and that's probably going to be the larger part of this show once we get to it in part two. But regardless, that's where we are. Eureka, before we move on with any of that, how are you doing too?
I have completely moved in to my new place, except I have to put a couch together and some stuff. My cat is guarding the couch as we speak, but... So pardon the mess in the background. We'll get that fixed. But if you watched me on the Sun show a week or two ago, I was sparsely moving out of that place. Now I'm in the new place. So other than that, nothing eventful has happened in my life other than absolutely moving my entire family and household. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, just that small thing. There are actually going to be, I guess this is as good a segue as I can get, but there are actually going to be a couple of Rowdies that are joining you in moving. we are going to have to discuss that later on. So, like I said, section one is going to be about USL playoffs. Section two is going to be about the Rowdies that are leaving in 2025. We'll get through all of that later on. Please like and subscribe to us on YouTube, any major podcast platform. And of course, please follow us on all your social medias, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, what have you. We are there at RBLR Sports. So Eureka, there were some playoffs going on this past weekend in USL League One and the USL Championship. I don't know which one you want to start with. I do have we have all of the results here. Yeah. And obviously the games lined up afterwards. There were some really big upsets. And tell me where you want to go with this, because I feel like we're going to focus on at least two games out of the four in USL Championship eight in the USL Championship and four in USL League One. I guess, don't know how many others there might be.
I guess we got to start with the biggest upset potentially in USL Championship history.
Could be. I
mean, you know, Louisville City crowned the Shield, right? With the most, I think they had the most points per game ever, and the most, if not that, the most, they have a lot of points in the East, and undoubtedly the Titan from start to finish of the entire year. And they get upset by that scrappy Orange team from Orange County. You have everybody's in the tournament. You have a chance. We were talking about it. Like, I know people were saying, oh, if the Rowdies make it, they're just going to go to Louisville and they're going to get beat up. But, Detroit. I'm sorry. I mixed up. Their notes are crazy here. But so Detroit, who tied with us, it was like, oh, you know, whatever. If we beat Detroit, whatever, we won't have a chance. Well, Detroit beat and upset Louisville City. So anything can happen in 90 plus minutes, and you know, there you go. So what were your overall thoughts on that?
What do you say? I mean, how did they pull this off is my question. I just don't understand it. It's unfortunate for us, obviously, because we could have gotten into that spot if we were slightly better over the course of two or three games. And I would have liked for us to be in the position to knock Louisville City off. But like, Detroit against us, they could only manage a draw, right? And it's not like we've been the best team all season, obviously. So right. How they went and they turned around after drawing with us 1-1 and they beat Louisville City 1-0. I mean, it's just got to be some type of curse, some type of hex on number one seeds. Apparently didn't affect the teams out west, or the one team out west, the number one seed out west.
Yeah. But
I truly don't know how they pulled this off. It's absolute insanity to me.
Yeah, like you said, it's kind of a curse in multiple sports too. It's like in hockey, it's almost a curse to win the president's their version of the shield. It's called the president's trophy. It's almost a curse. And if you look in USL, I think in League One and in the championship, the amount of teams that have been the number one or best team in the league and, you know, almost did the double, I guess, or triple with the Jaeger Cup. Being able to be the Shield winner and the champion is very slim. I mean, teams have done it, but it's not a given just because you're the top team and have home field advantage that you will even progress out of the first round as it sits. So, it was wild. I out of the two that I think we're going to talk the most about, I did not watch this one, but I was staying up to date with it. Between the Discord chatter in a couple Discords that we're in with USL related, and just the tweets and USL championship, of course, like kind of leaning in on the absurdity of what's going on. But yeah, I mean, I guess if I'm looking at my notes from this, it was I think from the notes that I was looking and reading John Morrissey, of course, on Backheeled, which you should subscribe to and go to all the work that John Morrissey does, just between his free USL tactics and the Backheeled is just unrivaled for sure. But we're looking at Detroit sort of they put a more defensive 5-4-1 together. They kind of tucked in their wingbacks, and then you basically just figure it out. You go park the bus and go get one. And that works sometimes, especially if you're outmanned and outgunned. And I mean, Detroit's we needed two goals to get against them. And you know, we weren't able to get that. And neither was Louisville in order to make it through. So,
yeah, I guess that's right. You could look at it that way. Everybody that needs two goals against Detroit City falters, but
yeah, right.
that it was truly, again, my first question was just how the hell did they even do that? It really doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Yeah.
To round out the Eastern Conference, eighth seed Detroit City beat first seed Louisville City.
Yes.
Remember, first seed in the East, first overall. As Eureka said, they set points records and all this stuff. So it truly boggles the mind. Fourth seed Pittsburgh beat fifth seed Hartford. So that means that Pittsburgh will host Detroit City in the next round. Third seed North Carolina beat sixth seed Loudoun United. More on that later. We will get to that one.
Yep.
And seventh seed Rhode Island beat second seed Charleston. Also, second seed Charleston is out of this. So Cal Jennings out, Juan David Torres out, Aaron Malloy out, everybody else that I'm forgetting at the moment, they're all out. And North Carolina FC will host Rhode Island in the next round. The Eastern Conference really is playing by its own rules, and nobody knows how they work, including the players involved, obviously. But yeah, both of the top two seeds are out. And I think that these were also, along with Hartford, actually, those were probably the three most informed teams in the USL, you could say. And for Louisville City to go out in the first round is one thing. I think that they lost, Charleston lost, and Hartford lost, which, to be fair, they were the lower seed, but still considering their form recently. Those three wins or those three losses are honestly pretty surprising to me. And if anybody was interested, my bracket for the USL Championship playoffs is completely blown. I already lost. It's out. And I think that I'm out really, really badly.
Yeah, it takes solace in the fact that USL tweeted out there are zero perfect brackets remaining.
Literally zero. There we go.
There are zero brackets remaining.
Not even the most optimistic of Detroit City fans could have guessed all the other results.
100%, right? So the Pittsburgh-Hartford was a rock fight, right? It was both teams had very low XG numbers. It was just, that's kind of what Pittsburgh needed to do. They needed to clog up the midfield, and that's what they did. Hartford really couldn't get going, and there was a huge PK it went to penalties, so it's 0-0 after extra time, and then goes to penalties, and then Eric Dick comes up with a huge stop on Haji Berry. What a way to start a PK. So which we'll get into. There was even more PKs. I mean, there was a lot of first rounds that went to extra time and then PKs. So
yeah, it's wild stuff in the East. To look out West really quickly, because out West it does exist. There is soccer being played out there. Surprising.
Yeah. But I'm still doubtful about this Western Conference you speak of.
Yeah. Yeah. First seed Tulsa beat 8th seed Colorado Springs. Phoenix, who were the 5th seed, beat 4th seed El Paso. That's not that big of an upset, in all honesty.
Yeah.
And Tulsa will face Phoenix in the next round.
Yeah.
3rd seed New Mexico United beat 6th seed San Antonio FC. That is what I picked for that one. So, hey, I got that much right on my bracket. Right. And 7th seed Orange County beat 2nd seed Sacramento. This is the other one, I think, Eureka, that you and I were focusing on. Because Neil Collins, head coach of Sacramento, has been knocked out of the playoffs again by Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's a Rowdies fan knows what I'm referring to. And if you don't, then, well, too bad, because I'm honestly not going to reference it. It's too much to go back and think about all over again. But another talk about curses and hexes and some type of voodoo that Orange County has over Sacramento. I truly don't know. It's not as crazy, Orange County beating Sacramento, as Rhode Island beating Charleston, in my opinion. However, I do think that Sacramento losing at home in the playoffs this early on, that is very surprising. And Neil Collins has got to be ripping his hair out right now.
Well, yeah, Neil Collins, again, like you said, he now has two losses against Orange County that are just heartbreaking, where they were the expected team to come out of the, like, overwhelming favorites, to be honest with you. I think Neil did. I mean, this is the one game I watched. I was rooting for Neil and Sacramento, and he tinkered a little bit with the lineup, and then it was 0-0 again. And then, but once it goes to PKs, you got anything, and you have a huge substitution, if I remember right. Like, I think they subbed in, Orange County subs in a guy and a goalkeeper in the last couple seconds of extra time in for the penalty shootout. And in that, Tetsuya Kodono just becomes an overnight sensation. I mean, to me anyway, I didn't know, unfortunately, I don't watch a lot of Western Conference games, and I didn't know he existed. And now he saved three penalties in a PK shootout, to send Orange County to the next round. So, you know, I mean, we unfortunately have seen Neil Collins coming just short of championships, and now unfortunately wasn't able to steer a giant ship into the next round. But again, it was 0-0, went to 0-0. I mean, and there was absolute madness towards the end of the of extra time, with two red cards being doled out, and just the. I thought that Neil was going to get a red, or someone was going to get a punch thrown or something towards the end of that game. It was a madhouse, as both teams were just slugging it out, almost literally on the field for the last half an hour to 45 minutes of that game. Yeah, it wasn't. It was entertaining as we were live. We were chatting with each other in the Discord, but entertaining. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't phenomenal soccer, but at the end of it, you win a PK and you move on. I don't know if Orange County last or when they won the cup, they went through on a ton of these kind of games. So
yep.
I'm not sure who's still Phoenix left over.
That a couple of years ago.
I'm not sure who's still with that other team and you know how much core is left from that, but it seems like there's just, like you said, voodoo magic going on with Orange County and their ability to hold on to the very last second and then just figure it out. So
it's truly hard to it's hard to understand everything. So yeah, let's go through that one more time. In yep. the Eastern Conference, the first seed is out, the second yep. seed is out, the third yep. seed has moved on, and the fourth seed has moved on. So right. those two were chalk. In the Western Conference, first seed did move on, second seed is out, and the third seed moves on. So Tulsa and New Mexico United are obviously the two best teams left yes. placed to move on, you would imagine.
Yeah.
And I guess what Pittsburgh and North Carolina are the two in the East. It'd be surprising to see
yeah.
probably any of those teams other than Tulsa make the final, but we don't know what it's going to turn into from here. Yeah. And in the playoffs, defense wins championships, that old thing.
Yep.
Eureka, you said it earlier, if you can bunker for 90 minutes and you can get one quick pop shot out of nowhere, get a single goal on them and otherwise defend, then you have a relatively good chance of moving on. Detroit City has done that. We have seen many really good teams go out that way in the past. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which perspective you take, that has come to play here. And I'll be really interested to see what the next round holds too, because I just simply cannot imagine Detroit City making an Eastern Conference final in the year 2025, the way that they have played. But Who's to say? I've obviously gotten so many things wrong with my own predictions. We're going to talk about the score predictions that Eureka, Carlos, and I did over the course of this season later on, too. Suffice it to say, Eureka, I think that we have learned that we actually know nothing about the sport. We know literally nothing about the sport, and there's really no use in predictions at all.
Undoubtedly, of course we know nothing, but what I do know is North Carolina, who I'm sure we'll talk about later on in the show, North Carolina now controls home field advantage in the East, and mm-hmm. Tulsa hangs on after one more round. They still, and I believe New Mexico also has home field for their semifinal or a quarterfinal, or yeah,
yes,
so, or, well, I guess conference semifinal, so.
Yes. So that is where things sit in the USL Championship. A yep. brief look at USL League One. One seed, one Knoxville, beat eighth seed Charlotte Independence. Fourth right. seed FC Naples beat fifth seed Union Omaha. So mm-hmm. Knoxville will host Naples. Seventh seed Portland beat second seed Chattanooga.
So let's go Hearts.
Yeah.
Hearts. Yeah.
I think Portland Hearts of Pine have to beat a dead horse here, have captured a lot of hearts. And I think that there were probably a lot of people rooting for them. I would certainly have rooted for them over Chattanooga, because I don't know if Chattanooga, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on who you are again, they are not even the biggest soccer club in that city. So yeah. that's probably an issue in Tennessee, but yeah. whatever. Portland did what they needed to do and they move on. They will be facing three seed Spokane, who beat six seed South Georgia Tormenta. So the two semifinals will take place on Saturday and then on Sunday. And we'll be interested to see how that one plays. Portland, after traveling to Chattanooga, will now go across the country and face Spokane. And Knoxville, like I said, will host Naples. So pretty interesting shakeout there. Eureka, do you have any input on these games? Because I don't have much other than I would probably say go Portland and their yep. awesome jerseys.
I like to watch League One from afar. This is about the time that I think I might. I haven't spent any time watching any League One, unfortunately. But as it whittles down to now the semifinals and the finals, I think it's It's going to be good soccer. I like League One as a whole. It's good to see. I mean, you talk about successful branding, successful grassroots organization success. I mean, some of these teams are outdrawing the championship. So it's like, it's phenomenal. And now's the time. If you do see, if you already pay for the ESPN Plus, you get to watch some of these. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That is the whole roundup of the playoffs. But yeah. Like I said, a real, real mess of things if you decided to make a bracket, and a lot of real big upsets. I don't think that we can call these cup sets because even though it is leading towards a cup, the playoffs are different here. But yeah, I don't know. Really difficult to make heads or tails of what went on here. I don't know.
I have no idea who's in either one of these playoffs. I have no idea who's coming. I mean, Tulsa is still the top seed over there, but like, are they favored now to win the championship? Who knows? You got to survive the tournament. So
you got to survive. That's it.
Who knows what can happen? So
yeah,
the unpredictability, I think, is the selling point. So
I totally agree. I totally agree. If you are looking at the seeds and you're looking at who's moving on, you're definitely scratching your head. So that is a positive in my opinion. With that said, liking and subscribing is free, but if you think you might need some new threads coming up for the year, let's say 2026, which will be on our doorsteps as soon as you blink, you can support this podcast a little bit more by heading over to shop.rblrsports.com and checking out all the designs that we've got going on there. There will be a link in our description, or if you're watching, you can click right there, right beneath my head, and you can use the promo code COYR for 10% off of your order. If you find anything you like, which, as I say every week, I'm sure you will. Eureka, this is going to be the larger portion of our show here because it is actually related directly to the Tampa Bay Rowdies, which, of course, is the subject of our program, too. Let's get into it here. We talked last week about two players that are retiring, Forrest Lasso and Leo Fernandez. Obviously, those are big players with big shoes to fill in Forrest Lasso's place, quite literally. But we are definitely going to see a couple more Rowdies players leave from 2025. I don't believe that any of these guys has announced that they're retiring, and I wouldn't expect that they would be retiring either. But just to let you know, three players at this point have announced that they will not be with the Rowdies in 2026. We have not heard from the club specifically, but I think it's pretty much safe to say if the player says that I'm not coming back for one reason or another, and usually saying thank you on their way out too.
That's a pretty good source. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The player's about the best source that you can get. So those players are Manuel Arteaga, Ollie Bassett, and Thomas Van Kaziel. I'll go through each of their stats, but before I do that, I wanted to turn it over to Eureka and just get your immediate thoughts on that news.
Yeah. I think Arteaga, hopefully does better with a scene change, coming off a successful campaign a couple years ago. I think it was, unfortunately, it began very bad. Well, I guess we can get into this a little deeper, but like, overall, Ollie, unfortunately, with the injuries, couldn't really get it going. He was given the opportunity to start. He made about half the year of starting, ups and downs. Then he gets hurt. That's about it. Van Kaziel, same thing. He becomes a stalwart starter under all three coaches that we had this year. And Arteaga put it up in the end, but all three of these guys had contributions on the pitch. I think Van Kaziel not coming back. I might be part of the youth movement, but there were ups and downs with him too. But I don't know if you wanted to get deeper into each topic. But overall, it's kind of like some good and some bad mixed feelings about all three of these players overall. Over their tenure as Rowdies.
Yes, absolutely. We should talk about the tenure, but I do want to hit on their stats from 2025.
Please.
So Manuel Arteaga, 36 total games. That is across all competitions. So by that, I mean, obviously, USL championship games. And then we also had Jaeger Cup games and two or three U.S. Open Cup games. I don't remember now. But 36 total games for Manuel Arteaga. Yeah. Of those, 28 total were starts. 11 goals and 4 assists in all competitions, 5 total man of the match, from 2025 or in 2025 from RBLR Sports. So that was either me or Carlos or Eureka when he stepped in to cover for either myself or Carlos in the past. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, you could say that those are pretty good stats. I think that anytime somebody hits double digits is good, but we're going to probably hit on this, that there were some dry spells over the course of the season for sure from Manuel Arteaga.
Yeah.
Ollie Bassett, he is the next one. 25 total games across all competitions, 18 total starts, 2 goals, 4 assists, 3 men of the match in 2025 from RBLR Sports. I think that he started well and probably things dried up after that. But as I said, we'll get into that a little bit more. Thomas Van Kaziel, 31 total games, 27 total starts, 2 assists and 2 men of the match awards in 2025 from RBLR Sports. So yes, let's start with Manuel Arteaga. He's the first one listed. And also, actually, I didn't mean to do this, but they happen to be in alphabetical order anyway. So that works out. Manuel Arteaga, Eureka, what is your take on his spell in 2025? And let's do legacies after we cover the three of them again.
For 2025, I think this was a bad year for him. I guess if you just look at just raw numbers, yeah, sure, he scored 11 goals, or he had 15 points total, but we were really, really, really counting on him to not only maybe repeat his 20 goal performance, but be one of the leading scorers in the league to. Especially when you look at Cal Jennings, not that I want to bring up those comparisons again, but we needed him to either be an amazing duo with Wubens Pacius or be one of the leading strikers. And unfortunately, if we were able to tally up a lot of the opportunities that he had in front of that net, I think that I'm not alone in Rowdy's fandom, in Rowdy's family to think that he should have way more goals than 11. I mean, and I know it's difficult. I know, but especially in the beginning of this year, when we were losing games by one goal, when we needed to get any of these points during a very tumultuous time in the beginning of the year. Unfortunately, that's going to be what I remember is the 11 he made, but also the numerous opportunities that could have been so valuable to this team. And there was a time where, you know, he may have been benched earlier if it weren't for there not being a really viable candidate to replace him. If we had another striker, if we had another person that was pushing him. And eventually he did get usurped by Wubens Pacius as the lead striker on the team, and it wasn't until late in the year that we finally said, "Oh, he finally broke through." And then towards the end of the year, he was phenomenal. But overall, as a campaign for 25, I know we're not doing player grades, but it would be a lower grade for me on the whole for his 2025. And his legacy is better than that. When we'll get into that later, but at his 2025. I'm trying not to be mean, but I it was a down performance for me. And unfortunately, we needed it to be better.
Yeah. I really can't disagree with what you said there. To start the season, I remember that it was Wubens Pacius and Manuel Arteaga starting every game together. And I think Carlos and I talked about being worried that they might get burnt out at some point if that was going to be the way that it continued to play out.
Yeah.
Obviously, it didn't. Wubens Pacius actually was the one that was dropped to the bench despite probably having better production, especially in the first part of the season.
Yes.
And you know, at that point, I don't remember how much offensive production we were actually getting. And you really got to say, I don't think that we had a ton of offensive production until the last couple months of the season anyway.
Yeah, Palmieri era.
Exactly. We're going to talk about that more over the course of the offseason. But when Paul Marie and Alex Mendez came in, I think that's when we really started to actually see some stuff from this team offensively.
Yeah.
That doesn't come down to Manuel Arteaga more than other players. I think that Manuel Arteaga is the symptom, not the problem, right? Because he's the striker. He's the guy who gets on the end of a lot of these final crosses. He's the guy who's supposed to head it home, and then he can go and celebrate the guy who gave him the assist. But at the same time, yes, there were still missed chances, to be sure. And that doesn't mean, even if it's just a lack of chances that he's getting overall that contributes to this, that doesn't mean that he's off the hook, and that doesn't mean that he couldn't have done more in games. So yeah. I do generally agree with what you're saying, Eureka. I think that Manuel could have had, I think that we've seen much better seasons in the USL Championship from Manuel Arteaga.
Well, I think it's part of it too, is the expectations were very high.
We
know that player is inside of him. We've seen it. We saw it. We had no reason to believe he's down was because of an injury or because of course the other players around him, just it didn't really click in the beginning of the year. So and that ultimately hurts it. But on the whole for 2025, unfortunately, yeah, that's it. But he's such a good player, and that's why I think it's so much of a disappointment for this particular season.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah. All right, the next player that we have then is Ollie Bassett. We obviously already touched on his stats for the year. Ollie Bassett, I think that he was a player that stood out as one of the early signings because he was coming from the Canadian Premier League, where he had previously been their MVP. It wasn't the season before the Rowdy signed him, but it was pretty recently. So
yeah,
I think that he came in possibly with a good reputation that, in my opinion, he might not have lived up to over the course of 2025. Eureka, where do you fall on Ollie Bassett?
I do. Ollie's a great guy. Obviously, we're happy that we got to interview him here at RBLR. He was gracious with his time all year. And then I know even towards the end of the year with him getting his injury, he was still very active and around, and Al Lang and, you know, learning photography from Morgan, as well as the couple photographers that we have here at RBLR that get to cover the games. So yeah, Ollie's a cool guy, passionate guy, all that stuff. On the field though, it didn't really live up to the billing whether we wrote that expectation too high or we looked at it like, hey, this guy's high quality and he's coming in, and we'll see how that translates from the Canadian Premier League to this league. But ultimately, I kept saying this in our chat that for all of the running around and for all of the action that he looks that he's doing, there just wasn't results to them. He did a lot. I mean, I'm sure his Opta statistic of him running around the pitch and up and down and left and right is on the higher end of like meters covered. But again, it was that part of the season where he was starting, when it was like there weren't chances being created. There were some defensive things that, like, he does all this running, but there's a lot of smoke, but no fire at the end of it. And unfortunately, he didn't get a chance to really, like, make up for that later on, like in the Paul Marie section of the season. I mean, he wasn't there. We could have used maybe some speed on the wings from him and a couple other players that got hurt. And we didn't get to see that. So I can only judge off of the 25 games he played. And ultimately, it just wasn't setting the world on fire, I guess. Again, it looks like he has a lot of potential. It looks like, and I'm sure this is I think this maybe splits the fan base a little bit. I'm sure some guys saw what he did and saw potential and saw the action and the movement and the desire that he has, which I truly believe he has all those things. It just ultimately, the USL Championship, it didn't translate.
Yeah, I can't really argue again with that. And I was frustrated at certain points, if I'm being honest. I think that Ollie Bassett has shown in small amounts. He's shown in small amounts what I think we all expected, and then it never really materialized into something that he could do on a more regular basis. It never turned into something that was a a genuine threat for the Rowdies. It was nothing that teams had to turn their whole playing style around to avoid. So I thought that Ollie Bassett had more to give us. And I still think he could. It's not like he went from, you know, a CPL MVP, in my opinion, to a pretty average player in the USL Championship. But unfortunately, I didn't see the level. I didn't see the level when he played with the Rowdies. Yeah. So yeah, I'm not sure what the difference is. And we of course wish him all the best in the future. But
of course,
he has a level that I just don't think he reached with us. That's the best way to put it, in my opinion. He's a good player that we didn't get to enjoy it. Maybe it's a type of situation where if he stuck around for a second season, he could get a little bit more, used to the style, could get a little bit more used to the settings, because it is very difficult, I'm sure, to go from playing in Canada to playing in Florida. But, at the USL Championship level, honestly, you don't get a ton of second years overall. If you look at the number of contracts, you don't get a lot of people sticking around for 2 years. So that's all we got.
Yeah. I wish him all the best.
Yeah, absolutely. The last one is Thomas Van Kaziel. Thomas Van Kaziel actually returning for his second stint with the Rowdies. His first stint was here on loan a couple of seasons ago as kind of a utility player. And what did he do this year? But a utility role. He filled in as a center back. He filled in as a right wing back. He filled in as a defensive midfielder at times. There were moments when I felt that he was more and less competent, to be sure, depending on where he played. And there are moments that I think Thomas Van Kaziel had fantastic games, actually. One in particular, I gave him the man of the match for this one. It happened to be the week that his wife had just given birth. And so I don't know if he was a first-time dad or if that was a second or third kid, but I do remember that he had become a dad. So it was notable. And Carlos and I were saying that maybe there was some bump in enthusiasm, confidence, whatever it was.
New dad energy is
exactly.
I can tell you, it's a thrill. Yeah,
it might have been something like that.
You're not sleeping at all, but the adrenaline makes up for it. So
yeah, right, exactly. It's a natural drug, obviously, but I thought that was a very, very good game that he had. But there were moments. I mean, well, here's the issue that I see overall. Defensively, the Rowdies were poor for the vast majority of this season.
Yes.
That's the real problem.
Yes.
The Rowdies were not good in the attack until, let's say, September, October, maybe August.
Two-thirds of the season,
not that long. But I think, unfortunately, the other side of the coin is obviously defensively. And I think that the Rowdies were poor for the vast majority of the season defensively. So Thomas Van Kaziel obviously is incorporated in the defense. This is not something that I would exclude anybody from. This is Aaron Guillen, Forrest Lasso, Lawrence Weick, Thomas Van Kaziel. Other players that I'm forgetting that filled in on the back line. So it was just we didn't have enough cohesion defensively a lot of the times. And so everybody who plays on the back line, in my opinion, this year probably took a little bit of a hit.
Yeah, for one reason or another. I mean, I'm sure everyone can look at the between the hurricane, which we had to deal with, the travel, which we had to deal with, coaching changes, which obviously the players have to deal with on a week to week, but also philosophy filled basis, injuries, having to move around. And that's one of the things I think Van Kaziel's utility was, that we had all these injuries at different times of the season. He was able to kind of be one of the players that had to move around. And so just on raw numbers, I wouldn't judge him because, like, you know, he didn't play all offensive or all defensive roles all year. I agree with you 100%. There were times where there was a game that he was the reason that they won and one of the top reasons going forward. But there were also games where multiple goals were, you go look at the replay and it was like, where were you in position? Where were you in the man? Did you get just beat one-on-one that led to the opportunity that became the goal. And so, yeah, it's the furthest of the two, I think, of all the players, Arteaga and Bassett and him, where it was like, I think his highs were very high and the lows were very low, and the consistency was just unfortunately not there, that you didn't know if he was going to be the liability or the reason, the strongest link in the chain, that why they were able to win the game. And so the talent level is very high. I mean, he's a solid overall player, but just didn't get consistency. And when there was a mistake, it was unfortunately capitalized by the other team.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big thing for us this past season. So
yeah,
it's unfortunate that it was such a common theme, I suppose.
and I hate to be so down on these players. We'll get into legacy, which I think will be much more positive. But this was a down year. This was the first year we didn't make the playoffs, and we didn't make the playoffs in such a razor thin margin, despite all of these things that went bad. That if the coin flips the other way on any three of these players, let alone all three of these players, if we get a different coin flip where Arteaga has a slightly better year, if Bassett doesn't get injured and has a slightly better year, and if Van Kessel has slightly better, higher performances and consistency, maybe we get 1 or 2 points more of the year over the course of the campaign. And, you know, and so it's just bittersweet to look at it this way, where it's like we were so close and these players had great highs, all three of them. Then you go but this didn't happen. This didn't work out the way it should. So again, I don't want to be so negative overall, but it's just unfortunately the reality of all three of these players kind of having inconsistencies. And that's why, unfortunately, they might not be brought back to the Rowdies. So,
yeah. I agree. Well, let's quickly touch on their legacies as well. I think Ollie Bassett was only here for 1 year, so
yep.
His legacy might not be as standout. I think Manuel Arteaga will leave with a positive legacy overall. As
100%. I said,
he did hit double digits this season. It was still a down season, and we just talked about how we probably wanted him to do better.
Yep.
But we cannot say that Manuel Arteaga overall for the Rowdies has been a poor player. In fact, I would say quite the opposite. He's been
plus. Yes.
Yeah. He's been a positive contributor for 2 seasons now. And I should have his full number of goals here. I don't have that in front of me, but regardless, I mean, he's a very good player. And I honestly think that wherever he ends up next, they're going to have a very good player on their hands too. It's just, I suppose it's about working the right system for him and creating the right chances that he can get on the end of. But we didn't do that enough this season. And he's not a flamboyant player, but he's a very noticeable player on the field. He's somebody that he will catch your eye because he fights hard. He honestly, he seems to inspire a lot of the players around him. Mm-hmm. With his commitment and his grit. Yep. And I'm going to remember that from him for sure. I'm going to remember that positively.
100%. Arteaga goes down in the Rowdies legacy as a plus player, a phenomenal striker, and at his best, one of the best that we can find in the USL Championship for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, Ollie Bassett was only here the 1 year. So the other one that I wanted to mention was Thomas Van Kessel. This is his second season again, mostly as a utility player. He played a lot more this season and he got a lot more starts this year as well.
Yep.
I think that he's going to be, what's the legacy of a utility player? Ultimately, it's a guy who, gives his all for the team, right? It's somebody who is willing to, do the dirty work. I think that's honestly, is that the right phrase that I'm looking for here? I think he's the guy who's willing to do the dirty work, even when players usually get specialized and they want to be this or that. And that's understandable, especially if it's the way that you grew up playing, you are going to be most adept at playing in a certain spot. But Van Kessel said, I just want to be on the field, put me out there and I'll do exactly the best that I can.
100%. He's not the biggest, strongest, or fastest guy on the pitch, but he worked very hard at multiple positions. And like I said, those highs are what I'll remember more than anything, is that, like, he was an impact player. He had the ability to be an impact player. And at this level, that is not given. I mean, obviously, we talk about some people who don't live up to that expectation through the years of teams that when the Rowdies bring you back, when the Rowdies bring you in, you, that is something to be, I think, also counted upon, is like, the Rowdies try to bring in players that are good people as well as good players.
Yeah.
And so that's absolutely how I would describe Thomas Van Kessel, who every time all three of these guys, every time we've talked to them through our official capacity, like a post game or an interview on our podcast, they've all been top class people first. And then, and all three of them won man of the match for us at different points of the year. And so, and over the course of their careers here as a Tampa Bay Rowdy. So, I'm sure if we have to play them, any three of these guys, if we have to play them again, it will be like, we have to mark these people and we'll be worried about our exes scoring on us, which seems to happen a lot. So, So yeah. Thank you to all three of those players. Thank you for your time as a Rowdy, and thank you for giving it your all. And wish you well.
Yeah, absolutely. We do wish everybody well that has represented the green gold. And I mean, that's not just being magnanimous, but the other thing, you mentioned it, the Rowdies do try to bring in good players and good people as well.
Yeah.
I think everybody is aware of how friendly the players are after games. That's part of what makes lower league soccer in America so nice, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There's all the chaos, there's all the crazy storylines, and that's something that we have already talked about even in this episode, but the players are very localized, and I think that a lot of them say they wait after games to sign as many autographs as they can. People sit outside Allianz Stadium after the game waiting for the players to come out, and they have conversations with them, and they take pictures, they sign stuff again. All of these guys have done that. And that is a contribution that they have made, not only to the club, but to the community. So, truly it is. Thank you and good luck with whatever future things come for you guys. Hopefully when we see you on the field, you don't score against us, just like Eureka said.
Yeah.
let's get into extra time here. There are two important things that I want to get to. But Eureka, I want to point out that you won our predictions game with 21 points. I had 19 and Carlos had 12. A very nice little trophy for our producer Eureka here. Carlos, I guess whenever he listens to this, he will have to ultimately deal with whatever punishment you dish out, because last year you did the, as close as we could get to the spicy wings challenge.
Yep.
As provided by Buffalo Wild Wings, not a sponsor, but a helper. And you should get to choose what Carlos is going to have to do.
I haven't thought about this. We have to come together as we have a team. We have our Connor, one of our writers. We have a whole team here at RBLR on our soccer division for sure. I think we can come up with something spicy to for a pun, but that's an evergreen episode. I think back, it was part of the preseason stuff where I was making predictions towards the end of it as I was under 1,000-degree heat, literally sweating and crying. If you want to see me get punished, maybe some of you haven't seen it. If you want to see me take my punishment like a man, that's evergreen at the youtube.com/@RBLR Sports. So, we're going to have to get with Los and see what he wants to, or what we want him to go through. You had to put a tattoo on your butt when you lost the Sun. I had to have spicy hot wings, when I lost. So who knows what madness we can conjure up for the sake of content, the never ending content creation. So,
the point is, we have gotten relatively creative with it, and I think that gives us a good leeway to get good leeway to see what we can get Carlos into.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
All righty. Now, let's hit on the 2 points that focus on the USL Championship again. These are directly related not to the Rowdies team, but who the Rowdies will play. So, in 2026, we are aware that Sporting Jacksonville are going to bring their men's program online. Not only that, but they will be joining the USL Championship. And in fact, today they named their new coach, Liam Fox. I am not particularly aware of Mr. Fox, but they are obviously getting started on things. It's the first week of November. I'm assuming that there's actually been a lot more of this lined up in the background than we were going to be aware, of course. But
yeah,
Sporting Jacks is a well-run club, even if they are putting things together on the field for their Super League team. But yeah, I like that we're going to have another Florida competitor. This means probably another Florida competitor in the Jaeger Cup. We're actually going to talk about USL expansion a lot next week because there's some really interesting stuff going on. But yeah, this is kind of cool. And I think that it's I think that it's going to reignite some good stuff for Tampa Bay Rowdies fans. We've got Sporting Jacksonville. We hate Sporting Jacksonville. We've got Miami FC, who are not going to be Miami FC, but are going to be Homestead FC or whatever the hell. Yeah. we hate Miami, but we don't really care because they're not a good team.
Right.
Sarasota is joining USL League One. Fort Lauderdale United is joining USL League One. They're another team that have a Super League squad already going. So soccer in Florida, Eureka, it's big. It's growing. It's awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say about Liam. Yeah, we got a Florida division going for sure. We're going to have like a – we're going to figure out a way to be able to track all the teams and make like a Florida Cup or something. It's like an RBLR – Florida Cup thing that we can figure out. Sure, we can do that.
I like the sound of that.
We between the minds here at RBLR, we can figure this out. Maybe that's the punishment is that Carlos has to figure that out. No. but Liam Fox, Scottish. So here you go. You got another Scott in the USL Championship. He's exactly 364 days 364 days older than I am. So he's almost to the day 1 year older than I am. And coming from Hearts over there in Scotland. So the Hearts to USL pipeline, at least for the last couple of years, has been is proven itself. I don't know much about Liam Fox. He was the caretaker manager for a couple stints over in Hearts. After his playing days, he kind of rose up through the ranks there. So we'll see. We'll see if this is a smart move by Sporting Jacks to give someone a brand new gig, their first gig as a head coach in America, at least, because there's a lot of transition that has to happen in this game. I hope for the Rowdies that if we ever play them, which we will, but like when we do play them, that we take the novice. He doesn't get the novice boost over us. So we'll see what happens with that. So congratulations to them for their new head coach, and I can't wait to beat them every year. So
exactly. That's a good way to look at it. All right. Well, with that out of the way, then comes the next part of this, which is unfortunate and also weird. North Carolina FC announced today that they will cease operations in 2026 with the intention of joining the eventual USL Division One, which we assume is going to be the USL Premier League. Yes. But in 2028, they are going to cease operations for 2 years with the intention of rejoining in 2028. So Eureka, you and I have talked behind the scenes about this. We've talked about this a little bit more in the Discord. I don't know how much I believe that a team is going to go away for 2 years and come back. Oklahoma City Energy is still trying, to be fair, but they are also waiting. And I don't know, it seems it's a bad place to lose a club. I will definitely say that. It's a very bad place to lose a professional club. That is a big population center. Lots and lots of soccer being played in that area by lots and lots of people of all ages. It's not just youth. It's like there's college, obviously a lot of people from that area or who end up in that area due to college end up staying there and continue playing soccer as adults. So it's a really bad place to not have a professional soccer team. And it's therefore, in my opinion, it's a really bad place for USL to lose a team. I don't know exactly where you fall on this, where you want to put it out there, but it's really bad, in my opinion.
Yeah, one, it's a shock, as you have North Carolina now with home field advantage throughout the rest of this playoff run.
Yeah, and
now for real. The timing of this comes out right now at this juncture. But also, I don't even want to say cautiously optimistic for them as a club. It's just like, I didn't like the way that it was presented from them, where they say, hey, they wrapped it. The way they wrapped it was, hey, we are applying for Division One, comma, or, you know, and the way we're going to do that is we are going to release every player under contract and not play at the level that we just we self-relegated, like when combined with the recent history, let alone the long-term history of this franchise, it's like, I don't think they've earned the benefit of the doubt that they will come back. I don't think they've earned the benefit that, because they just self-relegated themselves, if we're using that term. They just self-imposed them coming back so that they could get financially stable and work things out and do whatever they needed to then rejoin the championship, only for them to say, actually, the hiatus we need is to go even bigger and larger, which, unfortunately, if they're not able to like sustain themselves at this level, they need to then now go find way bigger support financially to field a Division One team, between facilities, payroll demands of players that will need it to be for that level. Like, they would have had to do that anyway, even if they continued to have a USL championship team. So now we're supposed to believe that they will have the ways and means to self-relegate themselves again out of competition and then come back super stronger. And it's just, it doesn't smell good. It none of it comes out like making me feel like, oh yeah, okay, they just need to get their ducks in a row, and then they'll be able to come up with millions and millions and millions and millions more dollars of finance and operations that's going to be needed for them to fulfill the promise that they're making in this. They're applying for D1, so they're promising that they will have a strong enough case to be allowed. So then my mind starts racing onto what is the real outcome of this. What will eventually happen, and how does this come to be the strongest business and ultimately organizational step that needs to be taken for them to reach the pinnacle that they want, that they've stated that they want to do. Yeah, that they've stated they want to go. There are different ways that we can take this that we don't need to get into on the podcast, but all of it leads to me just being like, okay, maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll see this version of North Carolina soccer back, or maybe we don't. And maybe it's a new franchise or a new ownership. Because, who knows? With their up and down tumultuous run in the United Soccer League system, who knows if they will get accepted? And then, where does that politic run from there? So, watch this space, I guess, with North Carolina.
You know what really sucks for me while we're talking about this and the potential for whatever to come in the future, right, is just North Carolina FC is the inheritor. They are the same club, the Carolina Railhawks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, we have the Tampa Bay Rowdies, the Carolina Railhawks. We don't know.
And in every league that the Railhawks were in, there was ups and downs and roller coasters and – fights with leagues and, you know, like just whether behind the scenes or out in public, it's just been like, I thought they were under good footing. I thought this was supposed to be the step in the right direction. And then after the short term in the USL Championship, this is the outcome, or this is the next step in the road. I don't know if this is a step up the ladder and they'll have, I don't know. Again, I watch this space.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to have to see how that one plays out, but not good stuff. No. Like I said, we're going to talk a lot more about USL expansion in 2026. coming up next week. So we'll get into North Carolina as much as we can. Then maybe some more information will come out. But there's also a lot of good stuff to come out for the upcoming season. Please stay tuned for that as well. Eureka, I think that we have done everything that we were going to do tonight. Is there anything left to say?
I mean, I guess I would say, enjoy the rest of the USL playoffs. I don't know the next time I'll be able to get on camera, so I'll just say I hope that we all enjoy the playoffs for what they are, even though we don't get to be part of them right now. And the team, is working hard. I know they're already taking steps. I've had conversations with people. I know they've already been taking the steps for 2026, and it might be a while until we hear things publicly, but I'm excited for 2026. I'm excited for this season to get just over with and for us to be able to switch into preseason mode now we're talking about weeks until the end of the calendar year and everything. So we'll see.
All righty. Well, with that, I will go ahead and say thank you, listeners, for joining us tonight. We always appreciate when you do. Please follow RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, anywhere you are. We are too at RBLR Sports. I am mostly on Twitter. If you want to get at me, at RBLR James K, you can use the hashtag AskRBLR, or you can reach Eureka
at Eureka RBLR on every form of social media. But my Denver Nuggets have just started their next campaign. Their fall. If you don't have a basketball team, you should watch the Denver Nuggets. They're awesome. Roma is towards the top of the table. We could have been at the top of the table, but of course we, in Roma fashion, bottled it. Things are going good everywhere else. So maybe I'm talking about Roma. Maybe I'm talking about Nuggets. Maybe I'm dropping Rowdy's news. Who knows? At Eureka RBLR.
Like and subscribe to our podcast. You can get the full experience on YouTube. If you just want to listen, no problem. We are on Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, Apple and Google Podcasts. Again, wherever you are, we are too. So for another week in the bag without a Rowdy's game, but looking forward to the future, as always, come on you Rowdy's.
Ybor is the cutest little cat. See you guys.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.